So how we gonna make a black nation rise? While you party down, young shock the house. Get down, rock, shock the house. Who was playing is on the loop. Training their kids in machine gun use. Okay, everything has a place and time. We can rock the house too.
So who's that from?
That's How to Make a Black Nation Rise by Collective Effort. It's an old school hip hop joint. So
that's good. Sometimes when the music's on, you know, you forget to bring the guest on. The music is so good, you go, oh yeah, 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 okay, turn it down a little bit, Maggie, but thank you, that's good. So hi, this is Eric Mann with Damon Azali. We're on the Voices from the Frontlines hour at your 4 o'clock hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. We're on the phone with Bill Fletcher, the executive director of TransAfrica, and also one of the organizers of the Black Radical Congress. Bill, you on the line?
I'm here.
Glad to hear from you.
Yeah, you too.
Well,
thanks
while
for having me on.
Sure. The first half of the hour, we had Guion Pereira and Max Rameau on from the Miami Workers Center, and they were talking a lot about the continued denial of rights in South Florida. I thought the themes that we'd like to work with you on, Bill, and because your history goes pretty broad, is focusing, though, on the crisis of the Democratic Party and its dilemma of, speaking for myself, those of us who are committed to defeating George Bush, committed to voting for John Kerry, but trying to figure out what in the heck is the Democratic Party doing, and again, it's such weak commitment to black liberation in this country. So one of the questions that we wanted to talk to you about is, just yesterday, on Sunday, there was this very impressive march on Washington of, I'd say, 800,000 women fighting for abortion rights, the full and complete abortion rights, trying to put some pressure on both candidates. But in this case, with all its incredible contributions, this was a challenge that John Kerry didn't mind at all, because his sense of the demographics and his sense of the vote is that he wants to take a stand for choice, and he knows Bush will take a stand against choice, and his pollsters have indicated that this is a good thing. But on the issue of black liberation in the South, all his pollsters have told him, basically, stay away from that issue. That we want the white voter in the South, we want the white voter in Ohio, we want the white voter in L.A., that's the so-called pivotal. They're now talking about, of course, all these coded things now, soccer moms and NASCAR dads. I don't know, I don't know too much about it, but I don't think we're talking about a lot of black NASCAR dads, are we? You know, at least I don't think that's code for black. So the questions to you, Bill, as you travel around the country and travel around the world, is starting with, do you think there can be any level of civil rights challenge to John Kerry before the election? Are there any forces in the black community even talking about this?
Well, let me start by first saying that I'm speaking as an individual, as a citizen, and not on behalf of TransAfrica Forum in discussing this, since we are 501c3 organization. I just want to be clear on that. In terms of the challenge to Kerry, part of the difficulty, and I was actually thinking about this yesterday during the march, the March for Women's Rights, is that there is such hatred and anger with the Bush administration that Kerry, to a great extent, I think, believes, or his people believe, that they do not have to make a commitment to, certainly to African Americans, because we have been among the main recipients of the wrath of the Bush administration, so that we will just simply rally to oppose. And I think that a lot of that is frankly true. Because of the very deep anger that you feel in black America about the Bush administration. But I think that the larger problem is that since the collapse of the Rainbow Coalition in the late 80s, in 89 and 90, there really has not been an effective political force operating within the Democratic Party, or for that matter, outside of the Democratic Party, that has been able to put the right kind of pressure on the Democrats. In 92, you remember the whole Sister Soldier incident that where Bill Clinton chastised Jesse Jackson for not having taken a stand against Sister Soldier on some of her lyrics or something. There was no real organization that could stand up to Clinton and basically say, enough with this. And I think that this problem has lingered. And I think particularly as many activists have operated within the Democratic Party as individuals, and have seen their or believe that their ability to change things is based on how close to the inner circle they can get, I think our position is actually weakened. I think this is the big challenge for left and progressives, actually.
Well, I'm glad you raised, you know, just like Willie Horton, I think a lot of our listeners probably don't even know that the Sister Soldier thing was completely choreographed by Clinton. It's a very important reference. That is to say, he was actually schooled to say, I want you to go and have a confrontation with Jesse Jackson on militant rap music to clearly indicate this double message again. One, to signal to the whites, I don't even take any advice from Jesse Jackson, and to signal to black people, but don't worry about it, because you know you have no place else to go.
That's right.
So this terrible, vicious circle that continues. Let's fast forward into, and as you said, let's fast forward into the present. Maybe we could move from there to Haiti.
Okay.
On this one, Kerry made a slightly better statement, but here's a situation where I don't even know the politics of it that well, although I certainly know that I totally support the constitutional right of Aristide to have remained president, mm-hmm. and totally support the absence of U.S., you know, oppose the Bush essential coup.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions we would have for you to help our audience understand is, what's happened since then in terms of both trying to get either Democratic support? And is there a movement, a genuine movement, to get Aristide back, or is that really not the present state of the Haitian movement right now? Where is it? Where are the fault lines? And where would be any potential pressure for more democracy in Haiti that either Trans-Africa is advocating or you're just advocating, Bill?
Well, the situation in Haiti, Eric, is horrible, beyond belief in some respects. Immediately after Aristide was driven out of office, word came of the beginning of assassinations of Aristide supporters, members of Lavalas, sympathizers, and assassinations and torture. In Cape Hessian, you probably have heard that Aristide supporters were put in oil drums that would sit out in the sun and where people would roast to death. And in other cases, containers of, you know, like in the container ships with Lavalas supporters were dropped into the ocean. So we're dealing with some very, very bad people that have taken over that are claiming to be supporters of democracy and freedom fighters. And what's complicated this is a tremendous split both in the Haitian American community, but also in Haiti, including among Haitian progressives, many of whom turned against Aristide, in some cases for very understandable reasons, because Aristide began following some paths economically that were more dictated by Washington than the needs of the people. The problem, or part of the problem, is that these progressives and so-called progressives align themselves with some of the most disreputable elements of Haitian society. And what I just simply could not understand is how do these people expect to survive? Because the assassinations are not going to stop with people that are card-carrying members of Famille Lavalas. They will extend themselves. And So one of the most bizarre things that I've ever experienced is immediately after the coup, we and other people put out a call for a petition to demand the restoration of constitutional democracy. Now, the position of Trans-Africa Forum is that President Aristide should be restored because he's the duly elected president. But we, you know, compromised on that in the interest of building a broader unity, and we said restoration of constitutional democracy. And what was amazing is that some groups in the United States would not sign this because they said, well, that's actually a tacit support of Aristide. And my question was, wait a minute, you're not going to endorse constitutional democracy? And literally, Eric, they wouldn't, because they were so afraid of coming out and appearing too pro-Aristide. And the position that we said is, this is a slippery slope you're on. If regardless of what the criticisms are of Aristide, if we acknowledge that the man was duly elected, then silence in the face of a coup objectively means support for the coup. You can dance around it and make Fred Astaire proud, but at the end of the day, it's support of a coup. In Haiti, the Aristide supporters have basically been pushed underground. So, yes, there are governments and people that are calling for his restoration, but I think the reality is that it's becoming, that a new strategic situation is opening up that has to be examined. I suspect that President Aristide it will take a great deal to ever restore him at this point, because the balance of forces within the United States are such that they want this guy out and as far away from Haiti as possible.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, and my name is Damon Azali, and we're talking with Bill Fletcher on the line. And Bill, I had a question, kind of coming out of the reparations movement. We're talking about the World Conference Against Racism. There was this demand for reparations for people of the African diaspora, black people in the United States, as well as countries in Africa. And it seems like, from what I've read about Trans-Africa Forum, you're kind of where the diaspora is, going to Venezuela, trying to figure out how to support the left and progressive movements in Haiti. And so I just wanted to kind of get your take on, I mean, a lot of the things that we talk about at the Strategy Center is that we're looking to build kind of a left within the United States that, you know, that is basically a multinational left, mm-hmm. in support and trying to make space for countries of the third world, liberation movements of the third world, to actually have some space away from U.S., you know,
right.
the U.S. fingerprints and hands and whatnot.
Right.
So in terms of the stuff around, you know, Haiti and the diaspora, Venezuela, the stuff you've been doing in Lesotho about Africa,
mm-hmm.
how is the movement here inside the belly of the beast actually linking to those? And it seems to me like, if I'm looking around in terms of the electoral stuff, the electoral arena, where black people are most organized, or one is around the churches, and that's a different story, but then also in terms of unions and whatnot. So just kind of your experience in terms of the labor movement in the U.S., what are some of the, are there any openings that you see to actually push the labor movement further to the left, and then also the links that you see within the African diaspora around the world to actually create more space for these third world movements?
Well, I mean, you're asking actually a lot of questions in this, so let me take one or two of them. First of all, the issue about reparations, we have to examine this more carefully and more broadly in some respects. And I think, you know, like the book that you put out, Eric, was very, very important in helping to provide North American readers with a glimpse, a better glimpse of the debates that were going on in Durban back in 2001. And I thought that that was very, very important. One of the things that I think in some ways is a postscript to the issues that you covered there is that there are demands, broader demands, for reparations for the continent. But these are demands that, frankly, are not being taken up in any active way by many, many domestic African-American supporters of reparations. And this is one of the greatest ironies that one could imagine. I mean, we at Trans-Africa Forum got involved about 18 months ago in trying to raise awareness around a lawsuit that was filed by South Africans, Jubilee South Africa and the Kulamani Support Group, against 20 banks and corporations that had collaborated with the apartheid regime. And so it was very, very clear. The complaint is very detailed. It names companies. It names how they were involved. And it basically is calling upon these companies to provide reparations and corporate responsibility. And one of the most remarkable things that we encountered in trying to build a campaign around this was that many of the people that we thought to be the logical base for this campaign in the United States, that is, people who were supporting reparations for African Americans, took a pass on this case. Took a pass on this case. Basically remained silent or gave nominal support. Said, yeah, yeah, of course I support that. Pass the ketchup. And it was like, and we couldn't get over it. But there's never been a formal explanation. And I think that there is a problem that has to be addressed, which is that many people actually saw or see other fights around reparations as potentially competition with the fight of African Americans for reparations, which I think, frankly, is an absurd point of view politically. But it seems to be practiced. So one of the things that I would say is that when we're thinking about the domestic reparations struggle, it's really incumbent upon us that we link it with the international struggle and that we look at, for example, the demand that President Aristide was raising in Haiti shortly before his ouster, that France provide reparations to Haiti. Why? Because in the 1800s, the French basically blackmailed Haiti and said to the Haitians that they were going to come back and attack Haiti unless Haiti provided reparations and compensation for those French that had lost their property as a result of the Haitian Revolution. And so we're talking about millions and millions of dollars, you know, with interest. So when we're talking about reparations for African Americans, we need to be talking about the demand, a very just demand, around reparations for Haitians. We need to be talking about the issue of reparations for South Africa. We need to be talking about reparations for Angola. In fact, what we're really talking about is ultimately comes down to a global redistribution of wealth. I mean, because that's really what's at stake in the issue of reparations. And the belief that we, African Americans, can somehow gain reparations and everyone else takes a pass is not only chauvinist, it's completely absurd. And it's something that when I was in South Africa recently, people were asking me about. They said, well, wait a minute, why aren't more African Americans concerned about this? And I have to confess to a great level of embarrassment about it. So I think that that's an issue that really has to be explored more deeply. And I realize in saying it that I'm stepping on some toes, and some people say, oh, Fletcher shouldn't be saying any of this on public radio. But I say, you know, look, we got to call it as it is.
Well, Bill, I think that one of your contributions historically, it may be a lonely one, a lot of mornings, is calling it like it is, because there's been, for those of us who were there when we saw SNCC and Fannie Lou Hamer and Stokely Carmichael and Rap Brown aggressively say, hell no, we won't go, aggressively oppose the war in Vietnam, move from even frankly, initially, Hell No, We Won't Go, was even focusing on simply the domestic oppression of black people in the South and saying, we won't fight, and watching the evolution of Fannie Lou Hamer's speeches on how much she was thinking about Vietnam and used Vietnam as a, not just metaphor, but a way to understand better black oppression in the South, to watch, of course, King's amazing last speeches. We're in a very, very difficult time, and I was in a environmental justice meeting about 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm really sorry I don't know the brother's first name, but it was Ken Surowiewa's brother.
Yeah.
And Ken Surowiewa was the environmental and national liberation activist among the Ogoni people and in Nigeria, who fought the Shell Company, was hung for his political beliefs. So his brother took up the cause. And there was this was Bob Board and others in Atlanta had organized this environmental justice meeting. And this was a predominantly black meeting. And he said, you have no idea how happy I am. This is the first predominantly black meeting I've been in the United States to take up the issues of Nigeria. Because with all due respect, most of the people who want to do this stuff are white kids on the campuses. And it's heartbreaking because I thought coming from Africa that, of course, the base would be the black liberation movement. And so he was almost bearing his soul just to say, "What, you know, please, you know, how can we help build more of this movement?" Now, on a positive level, you know, and this is not really about the Strategy Center, but on a positive level, or it's indirectly, the work that Damon and myself and Barbara Lott Holland and Patrice Cullors and others are doing in our very small community rights campaign, which is focusing on the prison industrial complex, is attracting a group of very wonderful young black students who do have an internationalist perspective, who do support the line that, you know, we know that Damon, you and I share, which is reparations for black people in the United States, the nations of Africa, and all those throughout the African diaspora as a unified political position. And I think just to give you a little encouragement that just like the Strategy Center, Trans-Africa Forum is not as big as it wishes it could be and not as many places, but you are providing, Bill, a lot of leadership in the movement by saying not just in unpopular things, but things that really need to be said, because I think you can play a role in recruiting more black young people in particular to this perspective. And
yeah, I appreciate that. I think that the I very much appreciate that. I think that we have to build up this kind of sentiment that we're discussing right now, so that it really does become common sense. And I think that part of it is related to how do we frame the issue of reparations, both domestically and internationally. Like, you know, in other words, if one thinks about reparations domestically as a check, that is, we're all going to get a check, it really does lose its political significance. It also loses touch with reality. And so part of what is before us is to really look at the political content of the reparations fight, the issue of the redistribution of wealth, and the linkages that the two of you are talking about in this program that must be built between what we're facing here and what we're facing in the continent, what we're facing in Latin America and the Caribbean.
Well, Bill, we have about 4 or 5 minutes left, and maybe what you could do at the end is tell us in terms of, and we met with several other brothers from Trans-Africa the other day, just give our audience a sense of the scope of, in maybe in a 3-minute soundbite, of, and ending with how to reach you.
Okay.
As what is the kind of programmatic stretch that Trans-Africa Forum is trying to carry out right now?
Let me answer that, but let me first say, Damon, your question about the labor movement, I'll need to come back on your program at some other point.
We'd like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, because that's a 30-minute discussion right there.
Right.
So I'm going to invite myself back. But Trans-Africa Forum can be reached, we're in Washington, D.C., we can be reached Our website is www.transafricaforum.org. Our telephone number is 202-223-1960. And what we are is an organization that grew out of discussions in the 1970s, largely among the Congressional Black Caucus, about the need for an African-American presence in foreign policy. The organization, I took it over in January of 2002. Randall Robinson was our founding president. He retired. And we have been shifting to try to build Trans-Africa Forum as, in essence, a black global justice organization, an organization that takes up issues facing Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. And so right now we are very much involved in the issue of Haiti, the U.S.-inspired coup, as well as the issue of Haitian refugees who are treated like animals once they arrive in the United States. And we're also exploring with our chief ally, Africa Action, the issue of pharmaceutical genocide, and specifically the issue of HIV/AIDS, and the manner in which the Bush administration and the pharmaceutical companies have been involved in subverting the efforts of African, Asian, and Latin American countries at buying or producing generic pharmaceuticals to address the massive crisis that's faced there. So we are a small organization, and the way that we look at addressing these issues and others is through coalitions, building coalitions not simply within the beltway of Washington, D.C., but in cities around the country so that there's real, honest-to-goodness pressure. Because the only way that we really affect foreign policy when it comes down to it is not in the main through lobbying, but in the main through changing what people consider common sense. When people feel the war in Iraq is wrong and they want to do something about it, we're affecting foreign policy. When people say that the U.S. undermining the duly elected government of Haiti or attempting to do the same thing in Venezuela is wrong, we're affecting foreign policy. So that's who we are, and that's what we're trying to do.
Great, Bill, and we'll take you up on your offer. We're going to do a show on the labor movement soon, and we'd love to have you back.
I'd love to.
Damon, get us out of here.
Great. So today we'd like to thank Bill Fletcher for joining us. Today we have music from Mos Def, Collective Effort, and Public Enemy, which is coming on in a minute. I'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, and our engineer, Maggie LaPique. If you want to get to the Strategy Center, you can get us online at www.thestrategycenter.org or call us at 213-387-2800. Please stay tuned for Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman, who will be speaking with the radical Israeli journalist Gadi Al-Ghazi about the current Sharon and U.S. escalation in occupied Palestine. She also will be speaking to John Nichols from The Nation, who will be talking about the current U.S. political scene and the struggle to reform U.S. media. So join us next week for Voices from the Front Lines. Thanks for listening. I got a letter from the government.